Hey, feeling unsure about your finances these days? You're not alone. That's why Noble Gold Investments is here to help. Just hear it straight from the people who they've helped. The Noble crew walked me through everything with no stress. With their help, I could finally sleep easy at night. And now this month, Noble Gold Investments is handing out a free 5-ounce silver America the Beautiful coin if you qualify for an IRA. Invest in gold and silver with Noble Gold Investments. Go to NobleGoldInvestments.com right now. That is NobleGoldInvestments.com right now. Hey, everybody, Dan, the Charlie Kirk Show. Thought crimes. What do we make of Travis Kelce and Taylor Swift? Our debate reaction, and should we shoot looters? Email us, as always, freedom@charliekirk.com. This is your warning. This episode is not the place where we are very careful, political correct, not the place. So for homeschoolers out there, you're warned, unscripted, fun. Email us, as always, freedom@charliekirk.com. If you want to become a member of the Charlie Kirk Show, go to charliekirk.com and click on the members tab. That's charliekirk.com. And click on the members tab. Buckle up, everybody. Here we go.
Charlie, what you've done is incredible here.
Maybe Charlie Kirk is on the college campus.
I want you to know we are lucky to have Charlie Kirk.
Charlie Kirk's running the White House, folks.
I want to thank Charlie. He's an incredible guy. His spirit, his love of this country. He's done an amazing job building one of the most powerful youth organizations ever created, Turning Point USA.
We will not embrace the ideas that have destroyed countries, destroyed lives, and we are going to fight for freedom on campuses across the country. That's why we are here.
Welcome to this edition of Thought Crime. Is it Thought Crimes or Thought Crime?
It's whatever you want it to be.
Crime in singular.
It's
actually singular. It's in all of the...
The whole thing is one massive, like...
Well, it's 1984. We could change it and say it's always been.
Yes. Eurasia has always been at war with Oceania.
Exactly.
And Oceania has always been at war with Eurasia. Jack, hello?
So we commit thought crimes on the Thought Crime podcast. So this is the point. So in this sense, this is using crime in its plural term. So crime as the concept. So the concept is thought crime. Therefore, the title, even though it does not have the S, it is all encompassing of the concept of thought crime.
I will say there is a growing loyal audience to this program. I get so many messages of people, right, Tyler?
I get so many people that talk to me about thought crime.
They come up to me and they're like, I just love thought crimes. Oh, it's thought crime. Andrew's really blowing me up. Blake, welcome back. Fan favorite, 10 out of 10. Everyone loves Blake.
We have a growing disloyal audience to the show too, I bet.
Oh no, there's some people that really send me a lot of messages.
They won't even send you all of them. Line.
The amount of Blake feedback is really something.
Get the bald man off. I don't like him.
Why do you have Blake on your show? You can never have disagreement. Only uniformity.
On the Thought Crime Show.
Exactly.
Everyone must agree.
So speaking about everybody that agrees, let's talk about the RNC debate, which really wasn't much of a debate. So Tyler, I want you to start with this one because you kind of know how the debates are structured. But first, Tyler, you have to try to make sense of exactly what is being said here. Let me try to find this here. Boy, Ryan, we have more cuts than I've ever seen before. Okay, let's go to one. No, the best one is, which is the best? There's this really good one. Okay, yeah, 144.
These are good people who are tainted by a broken system. And it's not the fault of anybody who's involved.
Some of us are tainted.
Excuse me. Thank you for speaking while I'm interrupting.
Literally.
While I'm speaking.
Well, you said by paper.
If I may finish.
You can't be on both sides.
Gentlemen, you'll have your turn.
One of the challenges
we
should have.
Can we please focus on the issues that matter?
We know we can make this in.
What, Tyler, what was this all about?
I don't even know because I didn't watch.
Yeah, so. I watched clips. I didn't either. Blake, did you watch?
Oh, no, I was with
Jack,
you, man.
You're the only one that watched.
Look, one of us has to take a shot for the team, you know what I'm saying? And it might as well be Poso. Leave it to the Pollock to pick up the shift, right?
It was a very Christ-like sacrifice.
I got to tell you, this was like, I almost, the psychic violence that I had to go through, just the absolute sheer psychic torture. And keep in mind, like, I did a term at Guantanamo Bay. All right, I did one tour down there. Right? This was
as a prisoner or as a guard, Jack?
Jack,
but it was sort of a 50-50 kind of split thing.
50-50. Did you guard yourself down there,
Jack? Do they show RNC debate clips at Guantanamo Bay, like to the prisoners to torment them, make them talk?
I still know some guys down in the interrogation cell there. So what I've actually been doing all night is taking the clips from last night's debate and sending them down. But then, of course, the response that I got back was, whoa, Jack, wait, we're trying to get the intel out. We're not trying to kill these guys. Come on.
Do they call it Haley boarding?
It's Haley boarding. We're going to be Christy Haley boarding.
Nikki boarding.
We're going to be Christy boarding. We're going to be Nikki boarding. We're going to be Ron boarding. Now, Ron DeSantis, of course, well familiar with that as a former Guantanamo border boarder himself.
So Jack, you watched the whole thing, you know, hard to navigate. I mean,
every minute, man.
Was there any takeaway? Was there any sort of philosophical or political, you know, breakthrough or disagreement? And why on earth within 10 seconds do we have someone speak in Spanish? Jack, explain all of that.
So, yeah, Charlie, honestly, the Univision part, I still am just flabbergasted about. They're opening this whole thing in Spanish. I don't know why there's a Univision host there, especially when all she did was spread anti-American hate, like say things that gun violence is unique to the United States. I'm sorry, you're from Mexico. Have you seen Tijuana? Like, there's entire swaths of that country that are controlled by the cartels.
That's such a good point.
And you're going to tell us that gun violence, by the way, unfortunately, there was a mass shooting today in the Netherlands, right, in Rotherham at some university hospital. So, but at the same time, why is a Univision host there anyway? Why are we talking about trans issues? Why are we talking about gun control? They're playing Ronald Reagan amnesty clips saying we need to be more like Reagan. I'm very confused about how this entire debate was put together. There was a question about Survivor, like who are you going to vote off the island herder?
That was fitting.
We are turning into a third world nation, and these guys are up there. At one point, they're arguing about curtains. They're acting, though, honestly, Charlie, like it's the 1980s. And I tweeted at one point that the greatest trick the Republican Party ever pulled was to just repeat the same 10 Ronald Reagan lines over and over and act like nothing has changed.
Yeah. So Tyler, you know this better than anybody. What's going on here?
I mean, the RNC has completely screwed up this debate format. So to revisit all this, the RNC had a huge opportunity because we pulled out the Republican Party, pulled out of the leftist-controlled C3 that managed debates. Remember this?
There's a commission, right?
There's a commission.
I thought that was only for the general.
No, it's for presidential debates.
Is that right?
Handle everything. Okay. And so the RNC, this is the first time the RNC is hosting all this stuff. And I have some insider information here. They don't have a lot of debates planned out ahead because these first two have been such an absolute disaster. They're really struggling with getting.
That's breaking news.
That's breaking. So that's insider. They're nobody, like they're not doing a great job at this, and they're struggling because they don't have a good product. If this was a good product, right, which is what people want, which is again that populist versus, you know, nobody wants to watch a bunch of, you know, insider technocrats argue and debate this entire time, and that's ultimately like the best case scenario. Vivek is like a technocrat trying to like come off the pedestal, right? Like, so like everybody else on that stage is a technocrat. So we have a terrible product that exists, a huge opportunity, and they're not taking it. How are you going to win the presidency when you have a Republican National Committee, a Republican Party that can't even put together debates? How are you going to go out and chase down the 100 million ballots that we need to be identifying? How are you going to do it? It's not. It's not going to happen.
So what you're touching on is interesting. There's actually a unique opportunity to have a robust conversation, Blake, of what does the Republican Party stand for, right? So Trump doesn't show up. Okay, fine. There still would be a pretty fruitful window to say, okay, like what do we stand on war? Like let's re-challenge all these tired dogmas, right? But we're not getting that. That's what I think is really irritating those of us that – I don't know, I've been awake and paying attention the last 7 years.
That's really why the hosting, you know, some of the hosting decisions are so painful. Like, yeah, having this Univision person come, because you're pandering to the, I hate to use the term, like the mainstream media, but what you're going to do is you're surrendering to them the ability to set the narrative. And what they're going to want to do is they, even if they're like trying to be fair, very often they're going to essentially have the progressive frame on things. And so, yeah, they're going to ask you about amnesty where they're like, well, you know, Reagan did amnesty when we had 1/10 as many illegals and when
he
hadn't been scammed.
It was his biggest mistake.
Yeah. Too. And also, you know, we hadn't been scammed by it yet. Like now we know, oh, yes. When you do amnesty, it's a scam and they just keep bringing
like
in
illegals.
That's
like doing lockdowns now after we've learned, you know what I mean?
So if you're going to do this sort of internal party debate, you just need to actually have a more partisan Republican actor. Like that's why having like Tucker Carlson host a GOP debate would be a great idea because he's kind of good at those. You know, let's hash out the ideological split within the party. You don't necessarily need to have, you know, for a party debate, you don't necessarily need to have this neutral journalist doing the questioning. But, and it's not actually that interesting.
But this is why your sponsors of the debate matter so much. Are you ever going to criticize Ronald Reagan in the Ronald Reagan Presidential Library?
I don't know. The Ronald Reagan Presidential Library does all the time.
they go they're to the left. They're calling too conservative. But are you ever going to have like an honest primary based debate where you're criticizing Ronald Reagan? This is why it's stupid. Like you listen to the base, you do things at the base, you get the right, you know, analysts to come in and ask the questions. And you have the right media partners. And Fox, by the way, which is your best opportunity, it's only downhill from here. Like the RNC is going to get real desperate, and it's going to be NBC and CBS News and a bunch of other really crappy, idiotic, right, to the left of the Reagan Library, which is already way too far to the left. And we're never going to have a conversation about what voters actually are interested in, so they're just not going to tune in.
So here's an example, okay? This is just one of many. And quite honestly, you know, we have all been in agreement that DeSantis is not good at this running for president thing. But he's just not.
Maybe campaigning, period.
But
he's actually good at running for anything, actually.
Jack, hold on. I knew Jack would just, if we get DeSantis, Jack has to just throw a dart, okay? But he's actually excellent on this education, Black history stuff. I think he's handled it terrific, okay? But listen to this. Play cut 141.
Florida's new Black History curriculum says, quote, slaves develop skills which in some instances could be applied for their personal benefit. You have said slaves develop skills in spite of slavery, not because of it. But many are still hurt. For the descendants of slaves, this is personal. What is your message to them?
So first of all, that's a hoax that was perpetrated by Kamala Harris. We are not going to be doing that. Second of all, that was written by descendants of slaves. These are great Black history scholars. So we need to stop playing these games.
I mean, what is this? What is this woman's name?
Great answer.
Ilia Calderon.
This, why in a Republican debate? I'm going to stand up for Ron DeSantis. Does Ron DeSantis have to endure that from a woman who can barely speak English? Like, honestly. Like it's an AOC lookalike who's asking like an MSNBC type talking point that does no good for us to understand where the Republican Party is. Jack.
Yeah, look, Charlie, a couple of weeks ago, we on this show were, I think, one of the only shows in conservative media that came out in support of Ron DeSantis on this textbook situation.
Yes, no, that's
and we
right.
said that a bunch of people that were running around attacking them were just wrong. And the textbooks were, I mean, DeSantis distanced himself initially from the textbooks, saying that he wasn't involved in the decision. But I say, look, it's very clear what was being said, right? It is a lie that they were saying, and I'm just going to, I'll clean it up for him even today, right? They didn't say that slavery was beneficial. It said that people used things they had known from slavery to go into business for themselves. That's all it said. It wasn't saying anything about slavery being good. It was just honestly, talking about the actual history of the country.
And what is this person's name? Elie Lecadolon? Like, I mean, yeah, people are still hurt. No, they're not. You think that like Black America is like wringing their hands in their living room? Like, oh yeah, I'm really hurt over a line in a textbook for an eighth grader in Florida.
And people are still hurt and they're crying. Governor DeSantis, they're crying.
Like, shut up.
They called her abuela and they shed their
tears.
Hey,
Charlie.
My name is Alilia Calderon.
They're so
Charlie, what's the number one condiment in America?
Salsa.
Why?
Because people like saying salsa.
Because people like to say salsa.
Because people like to say salsa.
You can put salsa. You can put salsa. You can put sauce on so much stuff.
Get that clip, Ryan. It is legendary. Okay, here is more. I don't want to. Is she technically a foreigner? I think she's an American. So I want to be truthful. But she certainly acts like a foreigner. Play cut 174.
Fence. The Department of Homeland Security warns that violence against LGBTQ plus people is on the rise and intensifying. According to a recent study, members of that community are 9 times more likely to be victims of violent hate crimes. As president, how would you protect this community from violent attacks and discrimination?
Am I watching like Rachel Maddow with a heavy South American accent? I mean, this is supposed to be a Tyler, this should make people repulsed. It doesn't have to be this way. If you want that, then go on CNN, right?
The number one attack is attacks against LGBT people.
Like, first of all, no, it's not. Second of all, like, what kind of framing is this?
The number one attack right now. And again, I grew up here in Arizona. You know, I understand. I don't speak fluent Spanish. I have many members of my family who do. But I have many friends who are first and second and third generation, you know, Mexican immigrants. So this is the number one thing, right? The biggest attack on their families right now is the attack on their family's small business. They all run small businesses, varying types, stores, service industry businesses. They all run their own businesses. Their life has been almost utterly destroyed over the past 3 years. Utterly. That's it. And all they talk about on Univision and Telemundo is the LGBTQ. Like, I ask a single Mexican business owner here in Arizona. We can walk down the street. Go to a taco truck and say, hey, how are LGBTQ issues affecting your taco truck business? It's not.
LGBTs.
Or your landscaping business. Or whatever. Your small business. Your store. Whatever it is. How is that impacting you? They're like, yo no sé. I don't know what you're talking about, bro. Like,
but Go ahead.
I just remember in DC, I lived near a Burger King. RIP, I guess we're boycotting Burger King now.
Poison King.
I did get food poisoning the one time I went there. But it had a television at it, and it was in a neighborhood that was mostly Hispanic. And I remember a big moment was, I think, 2019 or 2020. They had the TVs there, and the only guys who were there kind of in the evening were these like working class Hispanic guys who just got off their jobs, and they got the management to change the television channel from from CNN to Fox News because they wanted to watch Tucker Carlson
when
he came on at 7-8 p.m.
ASA, put on the Tucker man. ASA, I want to see him.
Oh, I like what Tucker has
I
to
like
say.
What Tucker has to say. Yeah. Hey, that's good stuff.
You can't put salsa on an Impossible Burger, okay? This is any place that serves an Impossible Burger.
They should be deported.
Not immediately.
Not the Hispanics watching Tucker Carlson.
There should be a country we send these people back to, like Impossible Land.
Only thing left at my, again, heavily Iceland. Hispanic grocery store in D.C., only thing left during COVID when they cleaned it all out was the Impossible Burgers and the turkey burgers.
I think that's great. But by the way, this woman, Elia Calderon, someone should ask, like, hey, what percentage of your people that watch Univision think men can give birth? Like, I mean, it's LGBT issues. No, Hispanics are actually vehemently against the radical gay agenda.
We should have a debate. She's Colombian.
But she's a Colombian born. I don't know where she was raised, though.
Yeah, but she's Colombian. So this is the point. Guys, we got to stop listening. And I know this is really hard to hear. We have some really great people on our team at Turning Point Action. Actually, Driana, who's awesome. She's Cuban.
She's terrific.
She's wonderful. But like, the number one group that we have to speak to, we have to connect with right now in America is the Mexican American community. This is like all that matters. And this is like where like there's the left, the far left, you have these crazy radical leftists that are born in South America and Central America. And you have these crazy right wing, right? You're not changing their minds. You know who you're changing the minds of?
All the people who are like, wait,
the muscular class, the ordinary,
the muscular right? Ordinary class, which are Mexican Americans who have been here for 3 or 4 generations that are like, I have a connection or 2 or 1, right? Here in Arizona, we have a lot of that, but that all they care about is their small business. They have a Mexican heritage. We eat Mexican food. Like I can't survive without Mexican food, right? Nobody's talking about Mexican food any of these today. Nobody's the closest we ever got
the best
was the
taco bowls. The top best taco bowls are made at Trump Tower. We need to talk about that.
and that's all he talked about for a week was the taco salad. That's not even real Mexican food. Like we should be talking about who, like real stuff that Mexican Americans and Mexicans care.
All right.
About.
More from Cardaro. Play cut 175.
Colombian.
Univision poll found that mass shootings and gun safety are one of the most important issues for Latino voters. Mental health concerns are not unique to the United States, but gun violence is. What is your specific plan to curb gun violence?
Wait. You brought up the point of Mexico.
That's the one that I brought up earlier.
Yeah, but cartels. You talk about this. She's from Colombia. You want to talk about cartels? You think cartels are bad in Juarez?
Yeah, Pablo Escobar much?
We're talking about Colombia. Literally,
We've had years where Bogota has more murders than Chicago. That's really hard to do. That's really, really hard to do.
I think it's Bogota.
I don't care how they pronounce it. I'm American. I pronounce it the American way.
Bojota.
Bogota.
Bogota.
Cartagena. Medellin.
All right. Okay.
If you're from Venezuela, if you're from Colombia, if you're from literally Rio, like you can't tell us about gun violence. All right. You just can't talk about it. And like, by the way, those three places make Juarez look walkable. All right. Like they make Ciudad Juarez.
Hold on. Juarez is still really bad.
But compared to like Rio, have you seen the crime stats in Rio?
Juarez goes up and down. Well, we don't need to go deep into the lore on Juarez.
My dad goes and gets his teeth fixed in Juarez.
We walked into Juarez on Periscope a couple of years ago. We did a whole thing on it where like Tanya and I walked over and we were with like DC Drano and everybody in El Paso. And we were like, come on, let's go walk into Juarez. And nobody wanted to do it. So we just walked over and everyone else was too scared. We were fine. We went in the middle of the day, of course, but we were perfectly fine. We had tacos.
Juarez had Tijuana had 2,052 murders in 2022.
Yeah, that's
not merely more than Chicago. That is three times more than Chicago.
That's the place you go for medical procedure and murder. It's the two M's, the two big M's.
Acapulco used to be this huge thing down in Mexico. It's like a resort town. JFK and Jackie O went there on their honeymoon back in the 60s, and now it's like totally cartel controlled. Like there used to be movies shot down there. Hollywood would do stuff. And now it's all just like cartel land. You don't go there.
Three big M's: medical procedures, murder, and Mexican food. That's why you go to Tijuana.
Okay. Our producer's yelling at us. We have to say who won or lost the debate.
Actually watched. Did anybody win? Donald Trump. Yes. But come on. Did anyone win?
Honestly, so I was handicapping this during the thing, right? And that's what people understand. Like we do this, you know, we're supposed to be like the political strategist here, to like try to explain what's going on. So Nikki Haley was having a really good night, all right, for like 80 to 85% of the debate until that crap came up about the curtains, which could have been funny. There's like curtains in the UN ambassador's office that Tim Scott brought up. And there was this big New York Times hit piece on it. And he tries to bring it up as like his gotcha on Nikki Haley. And instead of like brushing it off, she decided to get in this like shrill, nasty, arguing debate and like totally engage him on the issue. It got really personal and it sounded like the two of them were just throwing estrogen at each other. And it was awful. It was absolutely disgusting. And so she destroyed everything that she had built up prior to that point in that moment. So that was a really, really bad moment for her. And it really destroyed all the momentum she had built up until that point. Then the other big winner of the night, other than, of course, we can say Trump won, was Joe Biden. And this was because Ron DeSantis decided to give Joe Biden the biggest gift that he could think of with a giant bow on it by blaming Donald Trump for the inflation in America. This is a huge deal, one that Joe Biden's team online picked up immediately. By the next morning, they had already had an entire, you know, campaign video cut on this. This is going to be run in swing states. This is going to be said on the debate stage in 2024, where a Republican governor has decided to just completely adopt Joe Biden's White House narrative that Donald Trump is responsible for inflation. I think it was, I mean, number one, just a complete backstab by DeSantis. And in the pro wrestling world, they call it scumbagging, by the way. So he scumbagged him. And then what it really is was a kamikaze kind of move from a failing and desperate campaign to say that, well, if we can't win, then we're going to try to sabotage Trump. And that's exactly what they did.
Well, okay. But I mean, the Trump campaign has done that to DeSantis, too. Like,
the DeSantis campaign doesn't have any chance of winning, Blake. Are you paying attention to like how politics works in America, or are you just kind of like paying attention to Blake?
Whoa. Well, okay, but you know, I'm not on Trump's payroll here, so
none of us are.
Are any of us on Trump's payroll?
I don't know. Sometimes I wonder.
I wish I was on Trump's payroll.
Nobody's on Trump's payroll. I will tell you that. Like, there's literally there's only a few, and you will know who they are. That the U.S. murder rate in 2021 was 6.9. homicides per 100,000 people. Colombia is 27.48. So anyway, sorry, go back.
Okay, let's play another piece of tape here. Let's go to from the debate here. Arguing about the curtains, really fruitful. Play cut 150.
I think, look, I appreciate Tim. We've known each other a long time, but he's been there 12 years and he hasn't done any of that. They've only given four budgets on time in 40 years. He was part of that.
He increased the national debt.
He voted for the spending.
You voted for
it. He has made sure that the borders are open
and they haven't done anything. Look at everything in South Carolina.
12 years. Where have you been? We've waited and nothing has happened.
Here's what you've done.
Here's the thing that I find interesting.
Ron, let me finish this.
These guys have said,
here's the fact,
and I appreciate a lot of the things they're saying.
Nikki Haley.
I'm the only one up here who's gotten in the big fights and has delivered big victories for the people of Florida, and that's what it's all about.
Blake, it's just so lame. Like, is anyone going to care about this in like 2 days? I just can't imagine it. Like,
they didn't care to begin with. They didn't watch.
No one's going to watch. No one's going to care. No one knows. You need to have like watch Fox News all day to have any idea what anyone's talking about with the curtains thing. Nor will it just ever matter. It's like, what do we even remember from the Democrat ones like 4 years ago? It was like Kamala Harris, like something about she was like a girl on a bus or something. And it didn't matter. No one cared.
No one cares.
And I was a little girl.
And then Joe Biden came and
and that little girl was me.
Yeah. And then Joe Biden personally came in and resegregated the schools, and she still became his vice president.
All right. So, this is supposed to be the line of the night. He rehearsed it five times. He looked in the mirror. His consultants whispered him. And did he stick the landing? Well, that's really Rich asking if Chris Christie could stick a landing. Play cut 143.
And I want to look in that camera right now and tell you, Donald, I know you're watching. You can't help yourself. I know you're watching. Okay? And you're not here tonight, not because of polls and not because of your indictments. You're not here tonight because you're afraid of being on the stage and defending your record. You're ducking these things. And let me tell you what's going to happen. You keep doing that, no one up here is going to call you Donald Trump anymore. We're going to call you Donald Duck.
All right. I want to ask the governor.
Boom!
Whoa! He's done. He's just. I mean, guys, this. I mean,
how
just,
will Trump recover?
I'm losing all my Trump paychecks after this.
Easy check. So the question that a lot of our audience has, Tyler, is that those people that did watch it watched clips, and we got this question before. Is who's in the audience?
Not very many.
In person or
at home?
Well, yeah. I mean, online, not very many people or whatever. The viewer numbers, we don't know what they are, but I bet they're sub 10 million. Would you agree, Blake? I think based on online chatter, sub 10 million, which would be a disaster. Okay. Tyler, but who's actually physically in the audience? Because when Chris Christie starts taunting Trump, there was not a smattering, but I'd say a fractional applause. Like about half the room enjoyed it. So what do you think? Who actually goes to these?
Yeah. Topics? So again, so the Reagan Library is not very big. So if I was going to,
I logistically know the property pretty well.
So Charlie's been there a bunch of times. I've been there, I think, one time.
It's beautiful. I love it.
It's in a very beautiful spot.
It is very palatial.
It's very cool. It used to be very conservative. It's now like a very purplish area. Yeah. It's going to get worse. So
Simi Valley.
Yeah. So
thanks to Ronald Reagan's policies, by the way.
Yeah, thanks to just the utter destruction of California.
It's the ultimate irony, right?
So, a lot of people don't realize that. So, if we were going to host a debate, Charlie, at Turning Point Action, which we could do, you know, if the RNC actually wanted to work with conservatives, we would probably make it open and try to invite the whole world. Because why not? Like, why wouldn't you try to get, like, do this in a swing state where you invite people in
and
to
hear 25,000 people?
Yeah, to hear people, like give it, the public, general public, a chance to actually hear from who's going to be president of the United States. They decided to do this at the Ronald Reagan Library, which can seat comfortably 250 people max.
Especially where they decided to do it, which was next to Air Force One, right? It was right near that huge glass.
So that's before you add the stage.
But what was interesting to me, though, to start to interrupt, they did it in a different place than they did it in 2015.
Yeah.
In 15, they did it.
I noticed that.
Right,
yeah.
Jack?
Yeah.
I wasn't the only one. I actually think
it was the other.
The shot looked better in 15.
From 2015. So much better.
The shot looked way better in 15, didn't it? This looked awfully tight and forced, crammed.
It's tight no matter which way you do it.
Can the guys pull that together? Like, do a side by side?
Anyway, I don't mean to get too wonky into the aesthetic.
But no. You're 100%, I noticed it as well. I really did.
So Tyler.
I think that when they did it before, they tried to actually get more people in. This time, I think literally there was like less than 250 people there is what my understanding was, somewhere in that ballpark. So that's what they were telling people, at least at the RNC. The RNC members literally couldn't go, even if they wanted to, right? It was basically most of the people that were in that crowd were friends of Kevin McCarthy. So this is who it was. Friends of Fox and friends of the candidates who brought like 5 or 10 people there each. So yeah, to your point, that group, if you just take that collection of that group, like half of them probably support Chris Christie and Mike Pence. That's probably it. They're the super minority of the party.
But let me tell you why I focus on this. And Jack, and you and I are kind of big into showmanship type stuff of aesthetics and visual. Like I kind of geek out at that stuff. But it does matter. It's not everything, but this aesthetics do matter. But what I don't like is that people are easily impressionable on video clips and stuff, right? You and I do social media for a living largely. And sometimes when you have a crowd that is not proportional to the party, people could be tricked to think that there are more people that support the certain policy because totally. It erupts in applause, right? So it's not as if this is just some sort of like, oh, who cares?
That's why they put laugh tracks on sitcoms.
They still mic they mic the crowd, yeah.
Yeah, no, they mic the crowd for a reason. Yeah, laugh tracks and sitcoms is a great example. And that's also why you have live audience in football games, right? They're down. At home, you can hear it gets louder. So Jack, this is not an insignificant thing to dwell on where it's like, hey, when Chris Christie goes after Trump and you hear like half the audience applauding, it almost makes you kind of like second guess, but to an uninitiated, untrained eye, it could be somewhat persuasive.
Totally.
Yeah, they're basically using the audience that they have captured, essentially the captured audience in the studio, as another element of the debate to sort of lead the audience at home. This is a tactic that John Oliver uses. This is a tactic that Jon Stewart pioneered, using the weaponization of comedy and the weaponization of a live audience to push politics, basically. And now you're actually seeing these very same tactics be employed by the leaders of a political party, which, by the way, is something that Trump called out in real time in 2015, if I remember correctly, in that same exact room.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that debate actually, I actually think that one was more important for Trump than the first one. The first one was kind of his feud with Megyn Kelly. The second one, though, everybody came out firing for Trump. The first debate, they didn't actually come out firing for Trump. Remember, Blake? The one in Ohio? They sort of did, but
no one knew what was going to happen.
They had no idea. They didn't know if it was going to be a joke or a shtick. And then that was the famous Jeb Bush one, right? Yeah. And then Trump turned to the audience. He said, "These are all your donors, Jeb.
Yeah.
These are all your donors that are here." And like Trump broke every protocol of debates. He like attacked the audience, said they're all donors, said your brother had a mistake for, you know, invading Iraq. And it just,
And then he was the one who could subvert that, because they had that South Carolina debate where they were, you know, they packed it, especially with the GOP base.
Yep.
And, you know, then he just bashes the Iraq war really aggressively. They're like, oh, they're all going to boo him for this. And they did boo him. And he's like, I don't care. Whatever. And yeah. And then
and
after
he's like,
that,
it's it was, right. You'll know I'm right.
It was all so, over after that.
Yes.
But the kind of final point for me on this is just, TV debates are actually really terrible, and I think that is the bigger reality here. Trump could make them entertaining in his like very special way, but like having 10 candidates on stage, they're all trying to do their like rehearsed, you know, soundbite to win some stupid cycle the next day. Like, it is very profoundly meaningless and dumb in a way that like, I think you could say, like, these probably damage America, that this is how we do a lot of our politics.
That's a good question, Tyler. Does this the America, yes. The party.
It's the party, right? He's the party. So God has, like, works in mysterious ways. And with the, you know, cable and normal TV becoming less valuable and social media becoming more valuable, these are becoming less important. And they're just falling for the same trap over and over again. It's just going to go into obliterate. They're going to obliterate themselves, which that's exactly what's happening right now. Like, Fox is obliterating itself. The RNC, but the party itself has to be agile to transform to like what actually reaches people. And if the Democrats are going to do this better than the Republicans are going to do it, we're going to lose. It's very simple. And they are like, there's a reason why Biden won't debate, right? Why does Biden not debate?
Well, I mean, he's not capable, but yes, that's part of it.
But all of their candidates.
It's called dementia.
All their candidates, though, because this isn't the way that you communicate with people anymore, and this isn't what people look to, and it's not valuable, especially the way that they're doing it.
Yeah, and also matters. Yeah, that's right. It matters right. What your motive is. And the Newsom thing is interesting, because Newsom thinks the opposite. Newsom is so power hungry, and he's slippery enough where he tries to use the right's weight to generate power on the left, like a physics equation,
he's
right?
He's as smooth as Satan.
He is. He's Luciferian. Okay, I want to tell you about Public Square. Public Square is amazing. We had Michael Seifert on the show. Join the movement. Sign up today and start shopping quality products. Everybody watching, take out your phone, please, and download the Public Square app. It's publicsq.com. You can win $500 for referring friends to Public Square. Shop your values locally or online and create your free account today and start putting purpose behind your purchases. It involves small businesses you can trust. Make the switch to values-aligned businesses for everything from daily essentials to great restaurants near you. You got everything from places to work out, dog food, pizza, restaurants, snacks, firearms, place that you could do. It's all there. The values of Public Square are very simple. They are united in their commitment to freedom and truth. That's what makes us Americans. We will always protect the family unit and celebrate the sanctity of every life. We believe small businesses and communities who support them are the backbone of our economy, similar to what Tyler said. They believe in the greatness of the nation and always defend it. The Constitution is non-negotiable. Government isn't a source of rights, so it can't take them away. And the values guide everything they do. Businesses you find on Public Square are values aligned by design. Pro-life, pro-family, pro-freedom, publicsq.com, a community that supports your business and your values. Join for free. If you're a business owner, sign up today. It's publicsq.mobi/CharlieKirk, or just go to publicsq.com, download the Public Square app. Jack, riff on Public Square for a moment. It's a terrific product.
Well, so what's great about Public Square is I've said this before, but it bears repeating that It's actually Tanya Tay. So my wife, when she gets it, look, she listens to the podcast, she likes the shows, but she's not into politics 24/7 like those of us, you know, on the show here, us political junkies. She's not, you know, following every ins and outs. She's like, wait, why do we hate Burger King now? What's going on? Not that we eat fast food, right? But she wouldn't. You'd have to kind of like explain to her, because she's raising the kids, she's focused on health, things that like actually matter in the real world. But then she knows that she doesn't want to spend our money with people who hate us. And so she's like, look, can I just get a list somewhere of who's good and who's bad? It's like, she's really big on, she has this other app that she uses for nutrition, for whatever product, boom, you click it, uses the barcode to tell, gives you a score, right? Public Square is like that, but for businesses, where you can go in and essentially say, all right, hey, these are the good guys. This is where you want to spend your money. So if there's something that we need for the family, if there's something that we want to get, if there's something she wants to send as a birthday present, whatever it is, we've got family overseas, et cetera, that you can just go to Public Square, find out exactly what you're looking for, throw it in, and you know you have the peace of – it really is peace of mind, because for us – you know, being in the eye, the mind's eye as we are, being in the media eye, being, you know, on list after list these days, you know, we want to make sure that the good guys win and the bad guys lose. And Public Square is a super easy way for anyone to just, with one click, be able to do that.
PublicSQ.com. Check it out right now. Okay. Topic number two, shall we shoot looters? After a Philly police officer had charges dismissed for the fatal shooting of Eddie Irizarry.
Irizarry, I think.
Yeah, it would have took me five tries.
Irizarry.
I would have done five tries and got it wrong every time. Philadelphia exploded in America's worst spasm of looting and rioting since Floydapalooza, all caught on camera. More than 50 people were arrested, prompting a debate within the Charlie Kirk team. What's the best response to looting? Do we arrest them and hope left-wing prosecutors do their job, or is it okay to shoot looters? Let me be very clear. I think that if you own the store, it's okay to shoot the looter. But the police officers should not shoot looters. Blake, do you disagree?
I mean, I think it's worth like zooming out a bit. We used to have an idea like the fleeing felon rule. Like a felon who is fleeing from the police, like they can use force to detain him. And it can include shooting them because, you know, felons are dangerous. Obviously, they can be dangerous to the public because they can be violent people on the run and all of that. But I think it is worth considering this just because we have to remember like what looting really is. It is like the breakdown of civilization. It is the assault on civilization. And when you let it happen, it flourishes. And we've seen the ramifications for that, which is it, when you let civilization break down, a ton of people die. A decade ago, Washington, D.C. had 88 murders. It's already passed 200 this year. It could hit 250 by the end of the year. So that's literally more than 100 people who are dead, essentially because we allowed law and order to break down in D.C. We allowed the norm of following the law to go away, and instead people feel like they can rob stores with impunity.
I think if you own a store, no doubt. But are you saying, just so I'm clear, police officer sees a group, just start opening fire?
I think you could say like you could order them to stop, and then like yeah, if they
Or try to arrest them,
or try to arrest them, and if they keep coming, I think it would actually be like if the thing is I think people dislike it because they have the idea this means you shoot 1,000 people. But you don't. You really have to shoot basically one or two.
So this actually is something that this Mayor Daley Sr. in Senior did. There were Chicago race riots, right? And like, I'm not supporting, nor am I, you know, rejecting this. It's a fact. And growing up in Chicago, it was well known. He said, look, you shoot a couple of them, they all go home. Mm-hmm. Jack, where do you come on this?
Yeah, I mean, I would say there's also a middle ground. This is a great example of a place where we can employ pepper balls, which are essentially it's sort of a cross between a paintball gun and pepper spray, where you could just you shoot these things into the crowd. They're non-lethal, and they will cause the looting to stop immediately. They will force this crowd to disperse. And it's able to be done at a projectile distance, so you don't have to have the officer get into a situation where they themselves might become the target of a mob like this. And that's one of the dangers where I'm in agreement with Blake, because we have to understand that every shoplifting, they say, oh, well, it's a victimless crime. It's a victimless crime, right? Well, what if you try to intervene? What if you try to stop them? What if you try to do something about it? Now, all of a sudden, that entire crowd turns on you. Now it is an attempted murder. And we saw this with the 7-Eleven situation. Now it is a situation where they might want to actually turn on you. This crowd, that many people, that could beat you to death. There's only two or three cops involved. So, yeah, I think there should be something involved. And I think the pepper balls there's various other implements like this as well. Grenades, there's sonic devices, sound emitters, etc., that can be employed. But then, you know, at the point where fire hose. But if you want to come in and say, then if you're threatening the police, like this guy, Eddie Zaria, with when he pulled a weapon on the police after they had pulled him over, like I, at that point, yeah, go ahead.
It's just, I think it's actually beneficial to society for there to be the understanding that if you are committing a violent crime, and I would say looting is a violent crime, like this carries the risk of death with it. And that is a good check on people who will destroy civilization. And like, that's all we have. Like, it is a very thin line between civilization and barbarism. As we saw in 2020.
Where are you on the Singapore question? So Lee Kuan Yew had this issue in Singapore back in the 60s when he started, you know, really revamping the little island down there. Now Singapore has done really well for itself. It's one of they call the Asian Tigers, and it's all thanks to two things: prison and public flogging.
Ooh, public flogging is a fun one. And it's like, it's not an option in America because we've just decided it's icky. I think you could easily mainstream it by just making it an option. If you commit a, you know, your first offense or a lower level offense, you can do 6 months in jail or you can get flogged publicly. I think a lot of people would probably rather just
one flog for each month you would have had.
Something like that. Yeah. And it's embarrassing. It sends a good message to the public and it's a lot cheaper to do.
Does it work?
Singapore has a much lower crime rate than America.
So do you remember Michael Fay, the American back in the 90s, who was arrested in Singapore and then was sentenced to public flogging? You guys remember the story?
I don't remember it because I think I was mostly concerned with like playing Mario Kart in the 1990s. But I've heard the story.
It was a huge story. So if you actually go and look, Michael Fay is now an upstanding member of society. We actually, on the show when we were covering all this a couple of months ago, we looked it up and like, I think Salon was coming after us or Slate or one of those that can, you know, they're all kind of the same. I think it was Jezebel actually, now I think about it. That, we were saying, look, Michael Fay has gone on to, he's like a small business owner now. He's like in the Midwest. He's got like a couple of, a couple of businesses that he runs and he's doing really well for himself and totally turned his life around. And all thanks to flogging.
Just to be clear, I believe he vandalized a car in Singapore is what he did. And then
it was like a ton of cars, including like cars at like the governor of Singapore's house. Like, it was really bad what he did.
So Blake, the counter argument from weak Republican criminal justice advocates would be, but it could be a potential death penalty for a young person that might be caught up in a moment of passion of like. Like, I mean, I get it.
Yes.
You're like, okay, so that's the position. So a teenager goes and steals a bunch of Nikes, well, potentially could get a bullet.
Look what we have now. We have teenagers who are carjacking Ubers, who are joyriding in Kias and Hyundais, who are, you know, mugging people, who are committing these severe assaults. This is happening because we have unleashed chaos.
Is stealing, and I'm not disagreeing, is stealing Nikes or Apple computers morally equivalent to like assaulting a human being?
It is not, but I think it is easy to understate it. It is like you could do anything with your life and you decided to just go smash into a store, steal a bunch of things that aren't yours, endanger the public. And like these things routinely get violent in the act. Like these routinely lead to murders and such, as we saw in the aftermath of this, and say like, no, this is entirely unacceptable behavior.
So
it's like saying if someone just breaks into your home, is it like, can you not use force on those people if they're only trying to steal things? Like, is it really worth ending a teenager's life if they just want to steal your jewelry?
Well, I'm perfectly on the page of that. But Blake, is the part of your argument that also it would create deterrence? This would make looting almost non-existent.
The thing about it is that if we shot looters, in 6 months, we wouldn't be shooting looters anymore and we wouldn't have looters. Whereas right now, we have looters and we still have all these shootings because looting causes all other crimes to become easier and more common.
So here's what's the craziest part.
It's basically the broken windows theory.
100%. Broken windows is true. It's like been demonstrated over and over.
Oh, no,
you stop crime by punishing crime.
Yeah. So here's what's the craziest part about this whole thing. I'll throw this in because Jack will appreciate this. Neo-Marxists this is like what's so mind-blowing to me. How did they handle stealing in the USSR? So in a collectivist society.
Pretty aggressively, right?
Oh, you get shot.
Yeah.
It was the law. There was a law. I think it was called the law
Spikelets.
Even
though they don't believe in private property, right?
The law Spikelets, which was that if you stole grain, right? Because it's collectivist, we have to shoot you. Because there's nothing that will stop it other than shooting you. So this is like the craziest part about the whole thing when you look at the broader context of politics, is all these people that are advocating on behalf of just like looting and rioting are actually aligned with Marxism. But the end result of Marxism is that all of these people would be shot for doing what they're doing. I think it's just
it's a great moment, by the way, is in the Gulag Archipelago. So the Soviet Constitution,
Alexander Solzhenitsyn.
Yeah, they ban the death penalty, and someone brings this up when they sentence the guy to be shot, and the judge is like, he's not been sentenced to death. He's been sentenced to be shot, and shoot him they did.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. And yeah. That's the other thing. Death penalty by working to death, too, and Gulag. Like, there is, you have to address, this is what Marxists. So the only way that you actually survive in a society of with looting and stealing, and the most forgiving society is the society in which we currently live. But that's not what they're advocating for. They're fighting for a society that would ultimately lead to this repercussion. So it's like either we get more stringent as a society now to actually protect more people, or their own ideology is going to lead to an extermination of their of everything that they're teaching their children.
Yeah. And to have them, the moderate view.
The difference is, the difference, I would say about Tyler is that it's, yes, it would lead to extermination, but it would lead to extermination of their political enemies, namely us. That's the difference. They wouldn't actually just be going after like the petty criminals and those guys. Maybe some of them became too much of a nuisance, but what they'd really be doing is going after like the priests, the nuns, and the political dissidents, the guys actually causing problems to the revolution, namely the people on the show.
Yeah, the application of the law.
So I just want to make sure I'm clear, Blake. That this woman Meatball would have been okay to shoot her under.
Well, I think she was just recording it.
Regime. Well, she got charged with six felonies.
We haven't played the clip yet.
I know. 173 encouraging the looting and live streaming it, charged with six felonies and robbery. Play cut 173.
Call the police. They either lock me up tonight or it's gonna get lit. Copy a move.
Look at all that white supremacy, man.
A few moments later. Bad boys,
all right. So to me, it's.
What was that crap music?
I love meatball content. We're getting to that later in the show. I will watch any meatball content.
That's
a bunch of noise.
So I feel, first of all, I think if you don't feel like a profound, deep moral revulsion to like the imagery of that clip of just people pouring into the store, like you just have to feel like in your gut. You just have to be horrified by that. Like, this is the end of civilization.
You think that if Meatball would have gotten popped off, morally, is that okay?
You know, she was still just kind of being a screaming maniac. But I think, like, what I would say is it would be acceptable for the police to see that happening. And instead of just kind of staring at it, to, you know, run into the store.
To intervene.
And you know, to intervene before they smash the windows and such, too. And, you know, we don't need to get
A direct application of this would take out of the morals. So in 2020, so this is Aramingo Avenue. So this is Port Richmond. This is my brother used to live right up the street from here before we talked some sense into him. But he spent all of 2020 living it, like that was his like local where he went to shop, etc. Local shopping center. So in Philly. And so in 2020, this was the same area where other residents of Port Richmond actually went out with AR-15s and got up on the roof of this shopping center. And you know what's really interesting is the looters seemed to stay away when the guys were up there with AR-15s, Blake, to your point.
Yeah, and like the Rittenhouse thing, you know, when Kyle Rittenhouse was arrested, it was so common to see this take, like, you know, why was he even out there? Why did he care? And, you know, it's just they have insurance. They always love to say that now. They have insurance as if that just, you know, excuses every attack on civilization. Right. And I think as a society, we want to encourage the idea of someone who is like so powerfully moved by like evil and injustice in their community that they would want to put themselves at personal risk sometimes to stop it. Even if we'd prefer it not happen because we'd have police do it instead. We want that moral impulse to exist. And our leaders are constantly trying to kill that moral impulse. They are trying to make us not care about rioting, not care about shoplifting, not care about just having this entire parasitic class of society that just feels entitled to steal anything they want, destroy anything they want, and say that this is like a cry against injustice when they are by far the biggest source of injustice in society. But if you want a moderate take, okay, we don't need to shoot anyone, but instead what you do is, we have the tech for this, we know from January 6th, find every single person in that store, every single one of them, 10-year minimum, but like, no parole.
But like
that would do it too.
But like Jack said, we don't have the tech though, because we don't know who the pipe bombers are at the RNC and DNC.
I guess.
So, it's an application by selection.
Yeah, I bet someone knows.
But this is the point, and this is like the
good. You're looking into that.
Did you have that meeting already?
Not yet.
Okay.
Yeah, ALX-ness. So the big separation that exists here is, this is why the Second Amendment is so important, right? If corporate America wants to allow everyone to loot and ransack their stores and not shoot somebody, stand your ground laws are wonderful. This is why stand your ground laws are so important, is because it shouldn't be the police. It shouldn't be government shooting people, right? It should be the individual. This country is like, if you're going to come steal stuff from my house or from my store, I can shoot you and I'm not going to go to jail for it because you were stealing stuff from my, you know, violently committing crime in my store, in my place. And that's really the separation here. Because these places, corporate America is going to allow it to happen. Guess what's going to happen? It's going to be like San Francisco. They shut everything down and that's fine. Then everybody moves out of the cities, and that is the opposite of what Democrats want.
Okay, let's go to and CVS is closing 900 stores. I mean, look, Blake, I could definitely find a middle ground of non-lethal shooting. You know, shoot them with rubber bullets, hoses, and arrest them all.
I mean, if it actually resulted in prison time, but like what we've seen with 2020 was, is we had charges dropped against 75% of them, and then later they sue that the police used bad tactics. Oh, they were so mean.
Yeah, but why not just stand your ground laws? Like again, there's always private ownership of this stuff. People can finally decide if you have really strong stand your ground laws, you can start shooting people.
Yeah, remember the guy in Omaha who was defending his bar, and they charged him with murder.
He killed himself. So, we were aware of that, as it was really sad. But also, remember the Lululemon story before we talk about buy optimizers. Lululemon fired employees who called the police on blacks that were coming and stealing merchandise.
And that's a libertarian story.
Which is funny, because you know why it's named Lululemon?
Well, it's more than libertarian. They're like,
never mind. I'll tell that story later.
They're socially libertarian. They're like,
oh, wait, I think I ever heard about this, but.
What? The Lululemon?
The Lululemon.
Their products are actually pretty good. Buy optimizers. Summer or actually... Okay, one second. A chance to take a break from the daily grind and enjoy your life to the fullest. All the fun aside, we often find ourselves taking a break from our healthy routine too. You guys need to make sure you focus on the majors. Prioritize healthy eating, exercise, and above all, quality sleep. An interesting fact about sleep that we need to mention. Drinking more than 2 servings of alcohol per day for men and for women can decrease sleep quality significantly. Sleep is the key to your body's rejuvenation and repair process. It controls hunger and weight loss hormones, boosts energy levels, and impacts countless other vital functions. Good night's sleep will improve your well-being much more. Go to magbreakthrough.com/CJ show. That's why I recommend you start taking magnesium daily, but not any supplement. Get Magnesium Breakthrough right now. That's magbreakthrough.com/CJ show. Enter code CJ show for 10% off any order. The special offer is only available at magbreakthrough.com/CJ show. That is magbreakthrough.com/CJ show. Topic number 3, Blake, walk us through it.
All right. Well, so, you know, a lot of us are Christians. We read the Bible. It says that man is fallen. We are a sinful people. Mm-hmm. And so God must punish us for our sins sometimes. And so because we are a sinful people, we have to care about Taylor Swift and Travis Kelce, apparently. So Taylor Swift, famous pop star. I don't think I need to describe her. Is famous for her many different dating relationships with other celebrities. Her latest flame apparently is Travis Kelce, superstar tight end of the Kansas City mm-hmm. Chiefs, also a vaccine spokesman, also a Bud Light salesman, also, I don't know, he'll probably get a lingerie deal eventually or something. Anyway, he invited her to a Kansas City Chiefs game, and then this was relentlessly covered, and then we tweeted about it because if the vax didn't break his heart, Taylor Swift will.
Where'd you get that line from, Blake?
You made that tweet.
You tweeted it.
People have appropriated that thing everywhere with zero attribution.
Yeah, but so, you know, big picture, I guess, is
welcome to Twitter,
obviously
man.
It's a big story. Everyone's talking about it. We're talking about it now. Should we be talking about it, though?
Well, I have to be honest. I don't like Taylor Swift at all. And
most guys don't.
Well, isn't that the real topic, right?
But that's kind of the real topic. And I feel as if she's being forced upon our culture, like it's this Taylor Swift colonizing effort.
It takes two to be forced on, though, sort of.
Hold, no. I'll prove it. So then, Blake, don't even get me started. You're going to be like, don't watch the NFL. Forget it, okay? I'm going to preempt your argument. I am a Chicago Bears fan. Tyler knows this.
That's rough.
They are awful. They are awful this year. Justin Fields is not good. They are awful. They need new ownership. They need a new quarterback, new coach. So, I watch the Bears. It's a habit I have my whole life. So I'm watching the Bears-Chiefs game, and all of a sudden, the announcers, like these 75-year-old men, are like swooning over Taylor Swift. Why? Because the ratings of the game like went through the roof. Like people were buying like Sunday NFL ticket.
Just like, to explain, Charlie is upset that they weren't focusing on the Chiefs beating the Bears 41 to nothing.
That's fine. I care more about Oregon football than Chicago football. And by the way, as a Bears fan, we've been in perpetual misery since 1985.
It's a year starting with 20, and so the Bears are bad.
Unless it was 07, we went to the 08, we went to the Super Bowl and lost to the Indianapolis.
A certain team with a certain coach,
Mike Ditka,
with D, ends with A and has Icky. In the middle.
That was the one of the greatest sports teams ever assembled. Legendary more than one. But no, I feel
also the greatest.
Here I am. All of a sudden, Taylor Swift is like being forced on me. Like I didn't choose this. Like why do I have to look at Taylor Swift during a football game?
So it's kind of what you're saying is it's the Bears' fault because if they were better at football, they wouldn't have needed this side story to make the game exciting.
That's somewhat true.
So it's the Bears' fault. It makes sense.
The Bears have consistently been a top 10 selling stadium sellout, even as they sucked for
most
decades.
Loyal fan base.
They're number 5 on this Bleacher Report. They're number 5. So like, it's actually BS. Like most dudes, this is like Bud Light Light. This is the kind of stuff that actually makes people not want to watch football.
Yes, and it wasn't just like once. Every play, they were showing Taylor Swift jump up. Now, let's just get to the meat of it. I'm not a Taylor Swift fan. She's a narcissist. I don't think that she's very talented. But what is the appeal? I ask women all the time. What is the – does anyone want to start –
let me bring it up. I think one of our producers did have a very good take.
She's Elizabeth Warren pop music, and this is why I was actually semi arguing with my wife.
Wait,
about
DC Drano just totally stole my joke. Why would he do that?
Everybody
vicious.
When you run the internet, you run the internet. You know.
Do you want to just read the take from our producer Daisy?
Sure.
Yeah. So this is her description. She's a big Taylor Swift fan. The girls in our office are big Taylor Swift fans, Swifties. So she told us just before the show. Every stage of my life, she, Taylor Swift, has a song about it. She writes really honest female music that makes all girls that feel like her feel understood. The same way someone's favorite band can make them feel less alone if they're going through something, how music can spark joy, etc. She writes about all women's feelings the way no one ever has before, and most all of her fans grew up with her. She's been a big star for, man, like 15 years now, I'd say. It feels strange to say, like, oh, she's being forced on us. She's been getting forced on us since, like, I was in high school.
Look, there's a big difference between, but
Taylor Swift is not, like, some young star.
Yeah, but Taylor Swift.
Oh, now we're going into, is Taylor Swift old? Is she used up?
Yeah. Does Taylor Swift have any eggs left?
Well, I don't think she probably, I don't know if she had it to start with.
No, guys, you got to hear the story. This is crazy. So the other day, I get up for everybody. I'm going to make breakfast. This is before I wake up the kids. Tanya's still, you know, she's gorgeous. She's getting her beauty sleep. I go to the kitchen. I open the fridge. And the very first thing I thought for a second that I saw was an empty carton of eggs. And I thought, why is there an empty egg carton in my fridge? Why wouldn't we have eggs? And then I realized it was Taylor Swift sitting there in the fridge.
Why was she in your fridge, though?
I don't know.
Did you call the police or something? Was she?
No, she was cool about it.
I'm really troubled by this, but I guess we're all just gonna
guys. I'm gonna throw up a picture in our chat of Taylor Swift today versus
You send it to me and I can put it on.
I'm a slave for you, Britney Spears, which was like, this is a real point. This is a real point. Okay?
Britney's hotter than Taylor, of course.
Well, no, that's what I'm saying though. Like Taylor, like Britney Spears.
Not this week though.
Well, not now. She's like Taylor Swift's age, but like,
Britney Spears was also in the kitchen, by the way. She was doing a knife dance. It was interesting.
No, this is the differences between feminism and how it can go so poorly. The 90s to early 2000s feminism, which was like the lipstick and high heels feminism, like the, what was that? Was the lawyer movie? What's her name?
Legally Blonde.
That's wonderful feminism. That's the limit of feminism I can handle, which is like women are empowered to be like, this is like second turn. When you get into like Elizabeth Warren, third wave to like neo-Marxism.
You mean like bitter, angry women. And that's like Taylor Swift.
Like she's librarian, like your worst teacher you had, feminism. That's Taylor Swift feminism. And like, I just want to put this into the context. This is Taylor Swift's quote. Taylor Swift's quote from her. I mean, you have her quoting in her songs, "We are never getting back together," versus, you know, peak Britney, which is "I'm a slave for you." So like, this is the difference, right? Which is like, but no guy's going to enjoy Taylor Swift's lyrics, but you know, Britney Spears at her peak, like she was like a little bit of something for everybody.
She also dances with the knives. So I think that does get to, you know, there's the appeal of Britney, which is,
I'll take Britney today.
She might kill you.
No, I'll take Britney with knives, crazy Britney on Instagram today. Over naked knife Britney.
You want to go
over Taylor Swift homely.
What if Taylor Swift made a video where she had knives?
Look at this picture of Taylor Swift. There's nothing that any dude. I've been to a Taylor Swift concert.
That's Britney.
No, the first one I said. If I got dragged to one Taylor Swift concert, I will never go back. I was in the very back. It was awful. It was all women and gays. That was it. And I was like, I want to be dead right now. I want to be dead. I don't want to do this. I've been to other concerts with attractive females like Ariana Grande. I've been to at Coachella, seen Ariana Grande. Very impressive. I walked away from that. I went to Coachella one year. Ariana Grande got up, had a really great time with a DJ. It was fun. Taylor Swift wasn't fun. It was miserable.
Because most of her fans are miserable.
Are all miserable. Yeah, that's exactly right.
That's the thing. Her music is not about joy. It's about complaining about how terrible men are.
Yeah, but I grew up in the emo era.
Happy person, because she knows that her body count is what it is. Her body count will have a museum and galleria dedicated to it at the end of her career. At this point, you know, I mean, I can't even imagine what, I mean, probably the only reason that she doesn't speak out on the war in Ukraine is because she wants to get in on the baby factories there while they're still going, because she doesn't really have any other chance of taking care of any.
No, Jack, but this is the point. She is institutionally.
To finish what I was saying earlier, to make sure that I'm covering my bases on this, the real thought crime is maybe Britney's dad was right.
Whoa, time out. So I would take free Britney, crazy free Britney, over liar Taylor Swift, who sets up her whole life where she's not like a real person, and she's leading an army of women over a cliff against all of us.
That is a great point.
That is the most interesting
Britney
thing about.
Is innocent. We should just
bring back let Blake come in.
The most interesting thing about Taylor Swift, whether you like her or not, is she is. She's one of the first and greatest masters of like this kind of post internet where you build the parasocial relationship. So para means like or semi, whatever they are. So, you know, people don't have as many friends. They don't have as, you know, close ties to their family, but they can feel these very, it's easier than ever to feel very connected.
No, she's done this masterfully. It's manipulative.
You know,
you make videos,
you make your videos, you do your live streams, like, you know, I know the girls in the office who are fans of Swift, they know a lot about Taylor Swift. Now, whether that is authentic or not kind of depends on if you're a fan of hers. A lot of people would say it's all, you know, a very common attack on her is that like they'll say she's asexual or a lesbian in all of her relationships.
Taylor Swift?
They'll say this about Taylor Swift. I'm not saying it's true or not, but they'll allege this and that all of her relationships are, you know, faked to build her brand. And, you know, so she'll have, you know, she's got Travis Kelce now. Before this, she has Harry Styles. Before that, she has one of those guys from Twilight. All of that. She has all these different guys, and like the churn,
what a bad influence for women.
Like the churn is good. I mean, but what you could say at the same time is like a lot of women will like most women will date a lot of different men, whether they, you know, build up a body count or not. Like, they'll go on dates with a lot of men, and they're not famous enough that everyone knows who all of them are. But anyway, the attack on Swift could be that she's very good at massaging her entire personal life to build up this parasocial relationship. Everyone's like, oh, wow, Taylor's relationship with Harry, that reminds me so much of XYZ. I totally understand her. She understands me. I love Taylor Swift
and
her music.
She does it. She makes money off of you.
She probably hates you. She makes an incredible amount of money. Whether she hates them, I can't say. I mean, she doesn't have any like horrifying scandals that I know of. But
she doesn't dress well at all. I mean, she dresses like super revealing. What is virtuous about her for young women to glean? Like, date as many men as possible, complain all the time, ruin men's lives.
She hasn't started a family. She's in her mid-30s.
Yeah, I mean, you have no kids. Like, it's a terrible role model.
I have to assume she will, even if she's like the manipulative psychopath some people claim, I have to assume she would eventually have a child that she can then vicariously live through.
Yeah, I'm not even saying that.
Like Amber Heard. But
yeah, I'm just saying that what is the virtue here?
I should say, by the way, that our producer Daisy is watching and is blowing us up. She says she wanted to get married to her last boyfriend. They dated for 6 years and he didn't want to marry her.
I'm going
to
make
this pretty ice cold, I have to say.
I'm going to make a comparison here. So you talk about the type of music, the style of music is very emotionally driven, right? So you talk about like the emo era. I'm pull pop punk. You know, someone like Travis Barker. Travis Barker at least has kids. You look at Travis Barker, nobody looks at Travis Barker like he's like some kind of like someone to look after. Has always been involved, always depressed people with his music, you know, with all that stuff. He's like a transient person in relationships. He's really not a ton different, but nobody looks at him as like some kind of like idol in any kind of way. People would kind of like besmirch. Taylor Swift has created this totally false post internet, like you said.
Yes, it's all LARPing.
It's fake.
It's totally fake.
It's,
all right, here's the thing. Put 183 up. If young women start dressing sluttier because of Taylor Swift, which makes their life miserable. Like when women dress like this,
I don't know if
100%. I'm telling you, it's like why are you dressing like that, Taylor Swift?
I think it's worse.
You're dressed like a stripper.
Yeah, but women, like female pop stars, have always like encouraged. That's not the issue. The issue with Taylor Swift is that she makes women hate everyone. Like literally everything and everyone. Like all of her, like the empowerment thing. Again, it's the audience. You go to one of her concerts. It's not like a family friendly. It's a strictly female.
Trying to get a cult.
Cult. Yeah, it's a cult. That's what it is.
I mean, it sounds like you're describing.
It's a Pied Piper.
I'm not making that claim because I'm not as familiar with it. But it sounds like you're describing the elements of a cult.
It's cultish. Yeah. I mean, and look, people have cult followings, but like at least like you enjoy it amongst men and women. There's no men that really enjoy Taylor Swift. They just don't. Men fake enjoying Taylor Swift in
there's
order
no men
to impress women.
Taylor Swift. That's correct. That's 100% correct.
And that's what, like, that Travis Kelce is a dude doing that exact same thing in his relationship with her. Is he's in a relationship?
Beta.
Yeah. Well, he's a beta, but he's doing it to impress.
So
women.
So Daisy says this, as a woman, I would never want to go to a boxing match or a football game, something men enjoy. So what's the problem with women enjoying something for women? Because it makes women angry, bitter, and it doesn't actually have any fulfillment. Taylor Swift is a major reason why so many women are angry in America.
There's more women that enjoy the Chicago Bears game than men that enjoy
Taylor
Swift.
There's no redemption. She's a bad role model. She's not a good person. She's a bad icon.
I don't agree with that.
But the point is that there's nothing that actually is redeeming.
There's way more women that enjoy a Chicago Bears crappy football game than men who enjoy Taylor Swift.
Let's also remind you, her politics are cancerous. Her politics are poison. And this is another thing. I mean,
this is a strong point in favor of like the idea that it's all calculated because she does have left-wing politics.
Very left-wing politics.
Well, but it's sort of very superficial. Like she's not a hardcore, like, she doesn't do the stuff that a political true believer would really do.
Yeah, but she just did something. She got 4 million girls registered in like 24 hours. You see that? She broke the website.
That's the thing. It's so easy for her to do that. She's very good at navigating, like, this is America's prestige ideology that I, as the most powerful and popular pop star, will promote. She's not like, I don't know, like Sinead O'Connor or whatever, like, where she's like a
zealot. Didn't like George
zealot.
Soros buy her music or what was that whole thing where like she actually called out George Soros at one point at like some award show? And she's like, George Soros bought the rights to my songs and now suddenly she doesn't talk about it anymore. But then immediately after that, she started supporting publicly like extreme left-wing politics and left-wing get out the vote operations. It's just very interesting how that seemed to go together.
With the Taylor My Way album, the Scooter Braun stuff afterwards too. Like,
apparently in 2020, she hit the Soros family for their shameless greed. I didn't heard about that one.
No, she did. She said it publicly. But then what I'm saying is she said it once, never brought it up again. And then suddenly right after that, because there was a whole thing going up until, I want to say 2018, 2019, where she never talked about politics. And this became a huge issue. And then it was even like a punchline online where people would say, well, what's Taylor Swift's opinion on the Syria strikes? What's Taylor Swift's opinion? Whatever. Because she was famously non-political and she used to be friends with like Ivanka. And then there's something where it's like Jared's brother is married to one of her dancer's sisters or something like this whole deal. And so people were claiming that she was a secret Trump supporter and that's why she wouldn't tweet or, you know, comment publicly.
Well, about politics. This is the Scooter
but
Braun
stuff. Now suddenly she's flipped like but 180 degrees in the opposite direction.
But this is the Scooter Braun stuff. So this is corporate media guys getting bought by Soros because it's smart. Right?
Yes.
Like it's smart. And that's what happened. And this is like what's so mind numbing about the whole thing. It's the same thing as the Marxist, the neo-Marxist, you know, getting shot for shoplifting. She literally had her music bought, sold by Scooter Braun to George Soros, to the Soros family, Alex Soros, whatever. And she had to go out and like re-release. That was like their like, I believe the answer is like, the whole agreement of her going out and being able to re-release all her music was because they came to an understanding, like a total leftist backroom, smoky backroom understanding.
I completely agree with you. So there's something really weird about that. Where suddenly
they got together
like,
with like
this
Alex
is the
Soros.
Most mainstream call out of George Soros that you've ever heard. Then suddenly that video gets scrubbed. Nobody ever talks about it again. And like right after that, she just drives directly into these left-wing get out the vote operations. She's suddenly promoting the LGBT agenda. She's all over about politics, slamming
Can I also
Trump,
add to this, though,
everything.
In 2008, this is the other thing, why I brought up Taylor's dress. She started as this innocent, Midwestern-centric, pious, young Christian girl.
And I have the article on screen if you want to bring it up.
2008 song, quote, it's about Christmas. Something holy and not superficial. So here's to Jesus Christ who saved our lives. The question then asks in the article, is Taylor Swift still a Christian? It's a hot topic. We're not sure. She doesn't speak out about her theology or her faith. And so it's like this. She says she's more spiritual, but not religious. The question also goes on, is she a witch? Well, I don't know. But
yes,
if you go back to original Taylor Swift back in like 05, 08, like she was this pious, like Midwestern Christian girl who then turns into like the worst of Hollywood, you know, dressing in a revealing way. When was the last time Taylor Swift used her mega audience to try to bring people to Jesus? Has she ever done that?
No.
I'm not a Taylor Swift fan. I wouldn't know.
No, I mean, Daisy would know. Has she ever said like, hey, you guys need to find God? No, she's too busy bashing on former boyfriends. Okay. So, I don't know. We're running out of time here. We have like 5 minutes left.
The Soros Scooter Braun thing is really, really interesting. That whole thing is.
Daisy said I made a good point, basically. She said, no, she hasn't. Ha ha ha. I wish. Okay. I think that's a good point. There you have the biggest. Hey, I would respect her, but she's not leading people to God. She's leading them to wokeism, complaining on boyfriends, man hating. And she used to be a Christian. Daisy said, no, I didn't say you made a good point. She said, I wish. I added good point because that's what she meant.
And she's by the way, she's not like really like a Midwesterner or
she's from Tennessee though,
like,
isn't she originally?
No, she's from like 30 miles from me. She's like, she's from Pennsylvania.
Oh, is that right? Yeah. Well, she's definitely
like right
has that
up. So she's from, I'm more in the Philly bubble. She was a little bit closer to like the Harrisburg, but like Reading area. Yeah. So it's like, it's a little bit more rural, but like it's She's from Reading area. I used to go to the Reading Phillies. That growing up, going there, that was like the farm team. Like, yep. She's not some Southern whatever, but that Got was it. a image that she constructed for that era that she presented herself era. As at that point when she attained her original success.
Daisy says, "I don't think Taylor is a Christian anymore." She grew up on a Christmas tree farm. Yeah, I rest my case. Someone who like turns away from the faith and like pursues money, fame, and approval of the world. Good luck in eternity, Taylor.
It's the biggest tragedy in American history, in modern American history in particular, that country got hijacked by a girl who summered at the Jersey Shore and her dad was a stockbroker. I mean, it just isn't not...
That's so basic.
It's just not a... She's not a country music icon. She's just not. And they, people get in this debate all the time. She should not be painted on walls in Nashville. Okay. She just shouldn't. She just shouldn't. I'm not even a big country music fan.
I certainly am not. And I agree.
She shouldn't be. It's fine. You can be a pop artist, a pop star. Go get painted on a wall in Cape May, New Jersey. Some, you know, like go get painted on a wall in Philadelphia. You know, maybe paint over the ransacked Apple store.
All right. Well, that was fun. So email us freedom@charliekirk.com. And over under. How long until Taylor Swift and Travis Kelce are no more? Over under, Blake.
Like until they're dead? I could see their suicide pact taking effect.
No, not that one. Not when the mRNA gene altering shot makes Travis Kelce drop in the middle of practice.
That one's way more fun.
I'm talking about when will they no longer be together?
I don't think they're together now. I think this is all a psyop.
What's the goal of the psyop?
World totally domination. Agree with Blake.
You agree, Jake, totally agree, Jack, that just to make money? You know, but Taylor's a wonderful person. She'd never do something like that.
I don't think she's the type of person who actually is able to form direct relationships and try to even understand what a commitment is to somebody.
More fun answer. The Chiefs are in the AFC Championship game. They're against the Cleveland Browns, I'm surprised. The Dolphins. We'll go with the Dolphins.
Yeah, are they
AFC? And then Tua Tunga blah 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 blah.
Tagovailoa.
He gets four touchdowns, and then she's like, he's way cooler. I don't know if he's married or whatever. But anyway, and then Travis Kelce has a shot to win the game-winning touchdown, and he drops it, and she just walks out of the stadium, and then it's
then she
over.
Writes another song.
She writes a song, and it's just about how he dropped the ball.
Called Oh Travis,
and it's
My
like,
Travis.
It's it'll be full of these rich allusions, like he dropped the ball in the relationship and the literal physical egg-shaped ball.
And then in her new era's tour, she'll have like a whole thing where she dresses up in like a Chiefs jersey,
and then
tears it open.
Yeah, tears it open,
which would be
throws it in the garbage.
Definitely thematic with her new theme of tearing clothes off.
Maybe they switched her out, like they switched out Avril Lavigne.
This is what we're talking about. I mean, I think she's very alien-esque. I mean, just look at how she functions.
They switched her out.
You think she's a Martian? Avril Lavigne or Taylor Swift?
Well, no, it's the Avril Lavigne conspiracy. We've talked about it before on this for a hot second. Remember about how she got replaced?
Yeah, I was like, I kind of tuned you guys out with that.
This is the greatest American conspiracy theory
on the show.
I can't. We're out of time. We all have hard stops. I got to tell you guys about Noble Gold. I here have a thing of silver. Go to noblegoldinvestments.com. Producer Andrew was very, very worried. He said, well, you need more security because of this. Well, you better believe it. NobleGoldInvestments.com, promo code Kirk. Buy your silver, buy your gold, NobleGoldInvestments.com. This thing will not break, unlike Travis Kelce's heart. For the record, I came up with a joke first. NobleGoldInvestments.com, promo code Kirk. Buy a hedge against inflation. Blake says it might melt, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like
she melts the hearts.
She melts the hearts of every man. Poor Travis Kelce. I don't know if I should say poor Travis Kelce. He's also a Bud Light spokesman. NobleGoldInvestments.com, promo code Kirk, NobleGoldInvestments.com. All right, everybody. Thank you so much. Email us freedom@charliekirk.com. Tyler, Blake, Jack, we will see you next week. Thanks so much for listening, everybody. Email us as always freedom@charliekirk.com. Thank you so much for listening, and God bless.
For more on many of these stories and news you can trust, go to charliekirk.com.
The United States Constitution guarantees every American fundamental rights and protection of life, liberty, and property. Salem is celebrating our founding document with a special offer, a 1953 Omen U.S. Constitution lithograph.
Understand the value of these lithographs is to know the story. A master lithographer, immigrant named Theodore Oman, came to this country to find the American dream. 70 years ago in 1953, Oman printed a limited number of these exceptional Constitution lithographs. Go to SalemEventStore.com to read Oman's entire story. America's most important document stands as a testament to all Americans to maintain their liberties, freedoms, and inalienable rights. Buy it and display it proudly. Buy a gift for your family and friends, for all the teachers in your communities. There's a limited number, so act today. Go to SalemEventStore.com to get your exclusive 1953 Oman U.S. Constitution lithograph. Buy it and display it proudly. While limited supplies last, there's a limited time, so act today. SalemEventStore.com, SalemEventStore.com.